Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and we were almost late because I have a wonderful guest tonight. My name, of course, is Veronica Entwistle. My guest tonight is Steve Behrman, but Steve, well, I don't want to say that you're multiple personality, but Steve brings with him alter egos and different beings and other personalities that he's going to share with us. And we were talking about a evolutionary uprising. So that was a little bit disorienting for me and kind of exciting. So I can hardly wait to talk to you, Steve. Welcome to Paradigm Shifters, and thanks for shifting paradigms.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And we all know shift happens.
Yes. Well, as a lot of you know, Steve Behrman co-wrote with Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future and a Way to Get There from Here. It's a wonderful, wonderful book, but the idea, Steve, is that we're going to have a spontaneous evolution now. How long is it going to take? And what does spontaneous mean? Does it mean like a month or 10 years? Or
I think spontaneous means more of a concept than a time frame. It's similar to the idea of spontaneous remission. And if we look at the conditions of our world and look at the news headlines, et cetera, it certainly seems like the proverbial shift is hitting the fan. And
laugh, but you got to do something. You know,
when environments are in that kind of a flux and that kind of a reaching, in a certain sense, our so-called civilization has reached its maximum as far as how much more it can continue in the way that it's been going. We've seen in the last, certainly in the last 18 months, essentially the collapse of our economic system, of our house of credit cards economy. We see that more war does not make us safer, that more expensive health care doesn't make us healthier. Rich banks don't make us richer, and we're just seeing that. You know, what's going on? Why does everything seem to be falling apart? And we are in a very deep transition period right now.
But hang on, I want to ask you something. Didn't it all fall apart in the late 20s over a similar thing of investments in derivatives and all kinds of stupid economic?
Well, I think the economy certainly did. But if you look at the confluence of all sorts of things that seem to be falling apart, you know, we were not a debtor society in the 1920s. There was simply a shortage of money, and we can go into reasons why that took place, but I think in looking at in the 1920s, we were not in an environmental crisis. We were not in a world that was severely overpopulated. And even though we had just concluded the so-called First Great War, we were not a world that was in absolute danger of nuclear annihilation through warfare. So what's happened in the 80 years since the Great Depression is that all of the things that we were doing that had put us in that situation, we've just done more and more and more of those same things. And they tend to define insanity as continuing to do the same things over and over again, even if they don't work.
Right.
So we have become, in that 80-year period, we have what some have called metastatic debt, that the individual national governmental debt is, in fact, we can't even pay the interest on that debt. It's never going to be paid. And the only way that we can temporarily pay off that debt is by borrowing more money.
But I think never before in history has the flagrant, like the realization that you cannot trust any of the powers that be in those systems. I mean, that to me is really shocking these days.
Well, my alter ego, the Swami, says, the ruling class has flunked ruling class. They get an F. And yes, that's exactly right. And I think that it's interesting that, there have been all of these apocalyptic visions. And, you know, the original definition of apocalypse, it meant the lifting of the veils.
Oh, it did?
That's what apocalypse means. If you go
track
it down, go to your, you know, word origin dictionary, that's what apocalypse means. And so we are at a time where all of the veils are being lifted. You know, on the positive side, in our in the past 30 or 40 years, many of the great spiritual teachings and practices have come out from underneath this the veils of secrecy. That, you know, you can, you know, for example, the Kabbalah, which, you know, as I when I was a kid growing up in a Jewish family, nobody knew what the Kabbalah was, and now Madonna knows what the Kabbalah is.
Kabbalah
is good enough for Madonna, it's good enough for me. Yeah, so the point is...
Yeah, because the secret, what do they call them, the secret mystery schools, those have all kind of opened up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All of these have opened up. And so that's on the plus side. And on the minus side, all of the toxic human relationships, the what we call the residuedu of the dominator virus, of centuries and centuries and centuries of perhaps giving lip service to the golden rule, but really caving to the rule of gold, it's coming to a head. And the various secrets, whether it's the Kennedy assassination or the Martin Luther King assassination, 9/11, all of these things are, you know, they can't be contained anymore. And the reason why Bruce Lipton and I wrote our book, Spontaneous Evolution, is to offer the idea that as science is telling us, every phase of evolution, from the time that we began as single-cell organisms and combined into multi-cell ones, every level of every stage of evolution involves two things: increase in awareness and increase in community and connection. And so here we are on the threshold of an evolution that most people really can't grasp. But there are many people who do see this, and that evolution is recognizing that we human beings are each and all cells in a new superorganism called humanity. And in increasing our awareness of how we are connected and of this new story that science is pointing us in the direction of, and the more we begin to combine in community, the more apt we are to go through the, you know, to survive and thrive through this transitional period. In doing things the way that we're doing, we can't. I'm sorry.
I was thinking that it's very interesting talking about we're all cells in one being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but right now is the time of the cell phone, right? And all the explorations into the genetic doodah and so on. It's sort of really interesting that what is current in all of our language is the word cell, isn't it?
Yeah, that is very interesting. Cell phone, and in another sense, we are so connected through the internet and through the cell phone. We have instant communication with one another, and as has been the case in our history, the technology has outstripped the spiritual wisdom to understand how to use it. And so Arnold Toynbee, let me go back a little bit. Let me suggest that a really good way to look at what's going on right now is the transformation of the caterpillar into the butterfly. And that in the, you know, the caterpillar is a fairly successful organism. It crawls along the ground, it eats a lot, and so on. But there comes a point where all of a sudden the caterpillar cells begin to fall apart. They begin to morph. And inside that cocoon is a cellular soup and chaos. And in the midst of that chaos, these new cells called imaginal cells begin to pop up. And at first, these imaginal cells are very isolated, but at some point they begin to connect with one another, they begin to communicate, and they begin to cohere. And at some point, a threshold is reached, and the butterfly organism emerges. And what's so interesting is that the caterpillar and the butterfly have the exact same DNA. The difference is in the signal that it is receiving. If we want to look at our human society right now, the historian, British historian Arnold Toynbee, said that when civilizations are in decline, and you know we certainly qualify for that, these groups of people pop up, and he called them creative minorities. And these creative minorities have the vision to see what's next and begin to prepare for it and begin to build the next civilization. And a sociologist named Paul Ray, and perhaps your listeners have heard of his term cultural creatives.
Yes.
And this is a population segment that wasn't on the radar 60 years ago. Hardly existed, not even measurable. And at this point, the cultural creatives, who are people, you know, I'm generalizing here, but who recognize our relationship with all living things and with the planet, and recognize that we are here to thrive as individuals, to let our light shine. Swami calls that fulfillment. And we're here.
What did he call it?
Fulfillment.
Oh, okay. Fulfillment.
Fulfillment, yes, the light, letting the light shine. And we're here to do that, to actualize ourselves, to let our light shine, and to let that light shine on others. And we're also here as part of a community. And in working together, we actually enhance our individual freedom because we free up our resources from fighting one another. We free our resources from unnecessary competition, and we actually begin to, because there is less fear in the world, we free ourselves of these restrictive habitual beliefs that have limited our human potential. So
tell me this, if we've got economic dominance going on that is creating havoc, and many people are like cultural creatives or like many of us that are authenticating and trying to step away from that adversarial competitive doodah, is it just like a slow, I mean, is that where the, what am I trying to say? If we're having a spontaneous evolution, is this where the gap is? That's the drag back, and we're actually separating from it, and we're going to morph into a new species? Or what?
Well, I think that that's one way to look at it. I think that, you know, right now, as we lay out this our case, and of course the book is it's a big book, and there's a lot to it, and it's really hard to boil it down. But I would say that if we use the based on Bruce's work as a cellular biologist, you just begin to notice patterns in nature, these fractal patterns that are self-similar repeating patterns. And so the same patterns that took place in the evolution of life on this planet reverberate and repeat themselves in our human culture. And a good example is, if we look at the at vertebrae, for example, we see that the vertebrate life began with fish. Human civilization began with mariculture, like fish, focused around water. The next evolutionary stage of vertebrae was the amphibian. And again, human culture in a fractal, repeating pattern, reminiscent of nature, the next phase of human culture and society was agriculture, where, like amphibians, we were able to move our water, and so we didn't have to live on the water. we could take our water with us to cultivate our gardens. The third phase is the reptile phase, and that represents the phase of technology and machinery, because if you look at the difference between a frog, an amphibian, and a reptile, the reptiles are much more sophisticated, and they even look like machines. Their movements are very much machine-like. We are now entering into the mammal phase of human culture, and what our mammals are about is about nurturance. So the quality of nurturance is about to emerge. We're leaving the reptile nature of industrialism without heart, and we are beginning to enter into this mammalian and nurturing phase. Now, it doesn't look like that out there, because what we see primarily on the news is this reptilian organism staggering, or, if you will, the caterpillar falling apart. Mm-hmm. However, more and more people are receiving the signal from what we would call the central voice of this new organism called humanity. Now, this organism doesn't exist in reality, but it exists in the field. It exists in the possibility. And there are now some 70 million adult Americans, as I said, 30-something percent of our adult population, who are receiving this signal and are seeking to build a world and a culture that's based on these signals, that's based on we are all in this together, we're all part of the same organism. So it's not something that, again, it's not unlike the butterfly's transformation to the butterfly, which is inevitable. You know, a caterpillar doesn't suddenly stop and go, you know, I think I want to stay a butterfly. That's okay with you, right? Now, the caterpillar, it's just the process, and that's how it happens. But human beings have free will. And Bruce and I, in answering the question, well, how do we, what do we do about all this? We developed a 3-step program because, frankly, there's not time for 12 steps. And the 3-step program is, first of all, it is increase awareness. That means to begin to, you know, read Spontaneous Evolution so you understand that the pillars of modern civilization have been disproved by science. They've been shown to not be valid. Mm-hmm. So that's really a shocking awareness that we've been navigating by stars that have burned out. Then the second step is to recognize that there is...
What are some of the pillars before we move on?
Well, there are four that we identify. The first is the primacy of the material world. We call it only matter matters. And you will find people who believe that, and many of them are learned scientists, who believe that only the material world exists.
Right.
And yet, if you get down to the subatomic level, as quantum physicists have been exploring for the past century, you find that when you get down to that level, physics does not obey the Newtonian principles of equal and opposite forces. That in fact, what we call matter is really very rapidly moving energy. And the distinction between a particle and a wave seems to be blurred. When you get down to the subatomic level, it's not matter, it's energy. It's the field. And I'll give you a good example, something that I'm sure happened to everybody when they were in sixth grade. Your sixth grade science teacher did an experiment. He or she took iron filings and dropped them on a piece of paper, and the iron filings fell into a random pattern. But then the science teacher placed a magnet underneath the paper, and lo and behold, the iron filings arranged themselves in the pattern of the magnet. Now, if we didn't understand magnetism, we would say, wow, those are some very intelligent iron filings to put themselves
magic
in that formation.
Yeah, we'd call it magic, right?
We would call it magic. So what we're finding now is that there are many, many, many fields that determine the fate and position of material existence, of our matter, and we have not yet figured out what it is that causes that. Here's an example. There was Rupert Sheldrake did a very interesting experiment. He wrote it up in the book. He also has a video called Dogs Who Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home. And in this experiment, he put a camera on this woman's dog in her apartment, and he simultaneously had a camera on the woman, and you could see that the time codes are the same. And at some point, the woman is out and about. She gets a phone call on her cell phone telling her to go home. As soon as she gets the phone call to go home, the dog runs to the door. Now, how would one explain that phenomenon?
Mm-hmm.
Or the phenomenon that many people have experienced in your audience of intuitively knowing the instant that a loved one was in trouble.
Right.
Or knowing who is going to call.
So, or doing healing energy with people halfway around the world. A lot of us do that.
Right. And because modern science doesn't have an explanation for it, mm-hmm. we tend to dismiss these phenomena and as unexplainable. But nature and life have all kinds of patterns called chaotic that are not random. Random is just random and chance. Chaotic patterns have an underlying structure that has not yet been determined. So I'll give you an example. Imagine you have an aerial view of Grand Central Station in New York on a very, very, very busy day. And looking down, you see all of these little human beings, all of them moving in what seems to be a random fashion. There's no pattern to how people are moving. And yet, every individual knows exactly where they're going. They're going to get a train here or a train there, or they just got off, etc. But because we're looking down on this, we cannot discern the underlying pattern. But there is a pattern. Now, let's say all of a sudden the fire alarm goes off. Well, then at that point, people simply scatter. They don't know where they're going. And from looking down on it, it may look like the exact same thing. But at this point, it's random because there is no pattern, as opposed to chaotic, where there is a pattern that we are not able to see visually. So what we're finding out, those scientists who are delving into it, is that many of these unexplained mysteries involve fields that we are just beginning to become acquainted with. So the idea that the material world only is the only thing that exists has been severely limiting to us. It's left out more than half of reality. Another popular misconception is the idea of survival of the fittest. And we've inherited this learning that it's a dog-eat-dog world, the law of the jungle, it's me or you, when in reality, ecosystems evolve as whole systems through cooperation. Those organisms that make a contribution to the ecosystem are the ones that survive. And those that don't...
Have you seen Avatar?
Well, yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And
for those who haven't seen it, it's just a wonderful presentation of at least certain parts of it, or how being attuned to all the system is how some of them become very strong, right?
Well, you know, one of the very significant things about Avatar, I mean, it's been dismissed by some people as, Dances with Wolves in Outer Space. But what's significant about Avatar and what's pertinent to the times we're in right now is that we are looking at the impact of a military employed by a corporate structure essentially exploiting a planet and an indigenous people. We call it the old mining operation. That's mine, that's mine, that's mine, that's mine.
Right. Yeah.
And so the one, I think that people get, you know, people learn a lot more quickly through imagery and metaphor. And I think that this metaphor of the exploitive, destructive, global corporate state that cares only about its own well-being at the expense of everything, with a well-preserved military in its employ. I mean, that's a very powerful, it's a very powerful movie to see right now, because it's exactly what's happening.
Right.
And in the Avatar movie, there is the heroic soldier archetype. It's, you know, and this heroic soldier, it understands that he is serving in the protection of life as opposed to the protection of the predator.
Right.
So I'm seeing that this metaphor is going to be very powerful right now.
Yeah, I think it's very powerful. You know what? One of the things I wanted to ask you is that when we're talking about spontaneous evolution and we're talking about the shift out of matter matters and survival of the fittest and all of that kind of old rule that didn't hold water anymore, do you think that our subconscious, this is something I'm thinking about a lot actually, our subconscious, which is such a vat full of old concepts and beliefs and reactions and so on, can actually be changed, can be retooled, so to speak, by watching a movie like Avatar?
Even well, you know, again, I think that in this three-step program that Bruce and I came up with, the first step is awareness. So, if you become, when you see a movie like that and you have this strong feeling that things aren't working, that we're not in Kansas anymore, Toto, that, as you said earlier, that we cannot trust our leaders and so on.
We don't even have leaders in a way, do we?
Well, we have misleaders and we have people who are in charge. They're not necessarily leaders.
Right.
But that we can't, that these people don't have our interests at heart. And then,
yeah, really,
on top of that, in 2010, people see this movie, Avatar. It's going to register. It's going to have an emotional register with people. And I think part of what I was calling earlier the upwising is waking up, beginning to wake up to these realities, to wake up
You're
to...
You're spelling that with a W, upwising.
Upwising, wising up. We're wising up and waking up. We begin to realize that it isn't the way we were told it was. Now, some people will simply just go running back into a hole because it's simply too threatening to live in a world that doesn't have these pillars that we grew up with. And
right.
I actually heard a woman say this several years ago when confronted by some perpetration that the government did. She said, well, it may be true, but I don't believe it. So I think that there are some people that are going to retreat that way. But once you have the awareness, that, as you suggested, our subconscious has been programmed with beliefs, with emotional toxicity that we don't even recognize is limiting us.
Mm-hmm. So, because it's also fairly collective in many ways, isn't it?
Exactly, and we mistake these beliefs for reality. We mistake
right.
our cultural limitations for reality.
For pillars.
Yeah, and so the first step in deprogramming ourselves is becoming aware that we are programmed.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the lifting of the veils is, there's been a lot of disillusionment. Whether people are disillusioned with Obama or whether right-wing people are disillusioned with their party. But, of course, the key cause of disillusionment is illusionment. So, as the veils are being lifted, these illusions are falling away, And what are we left with? You mentioned the economy before, so let's go back to the economy. What are we left with?
And I have a question about the economy is why, after a year, is it way, the Goldman Sachs is like four times more success than it had before the whole, you know, when it all collapsed?
Because nothing has changed, because Obama...
Well, it changed. It just went worse. You know?
Well, because Obama is the CEO of the American empire. And he has to take orders from his board of directors as opposed to we, the shareholders.
That's right.
And because it has to get worse before it gets better, the caterpillar has to completely fall apart. Hmm. And part of this, you know, the Democratic Party being the kinder face of empire, well, guess what? The empire still has the same big fat ass.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't think it matters whether you're Republican or Democrat right now when it comes to that.
Right now it doesn't. And, you know, you can say that the Republicans, I mean, to me, the Republicans represent the distorted male archetype of abuser, and the Democrats represent the distorted feminine archetype of enabler. They're both dysfunctional archetypes.
Right.
Working separately, fighting one another, can't work. So what we have to do is simply, we call it overgrowing the current system, to realize that we have to leave these very safe and now obsolete sanctuaries of left and right, and recognize that we as a collective have to ask ourselves in terms of progressive and conservative, how do we want to progress, and what do we wish to conserve?
Well,
in other
good.
Words, we have to use the functional aspects of those two natural tendencies in a way that's going to benefit the entirety of humanity.
And I think the fact that we've dropped into PCs and cell phones and we're authenticating and individuating in terms of our like access to the world and knowledge, I think is helping wake up more and more people to kind of an authentic perspective instead of an illusionary perspective.
And so that's really important. So the first step in our deprogramming ourselves is awakening. The second step is, now that we're awake, what do we choose? Do we choose to feed the caterpillar, or do we choose to build a butterfly? Do we empower the old story of it's me or you? Or do we empower a new story where it's you and me? And finally, the third step is, based on that choice, what do we do? What is our action? What is our practice? How do we begin to put this into practice? If we are indeed all cells in this new organism, well, then let's prove it. Let's act as if that's the case. And this is where the new economy is already being built. The new economy is built on four things. It's built on the energy from the sun, which for our intents and purposes is infinite. You know, there's certainly enough energy from the sun to power everything we have and more. It's our job, our function of creative technology, which I'll talk about, is to find a way to do that. The second aspect of healthy economics, of real economics, is the food that comes from the earth every year. Every year, food pops up. Even lousy farmers can't help food coming up. You know? I'm a lousy farmer, but I can't help it. My tomatoes are coming up. Every year, they come up. In spite of what I do. So the recurring wealth, our recurring planetary renewable wealth, is the food, the things that grow, the things that are a result of photosynthesis, which is the interaction of the wave energy from the sun with the particles on the earth. Every energy that we can use is ultimately solar. You could look at the oil that comes out of the ground, and as Tom Hartman called it, These are the last hours of ancient sunlight. This is photosynthesis that happened millions and millions of years ago, and we are using that now. So the renewable resources on the planet is what comes from the sun and what comes from the earth. But then there are two human resources that we bring to the mix, and those are love and imagination. Love being the universal harmonic. And as Swami would say, there's no harm in harmony. When things are harmonious, things work more efficiently. It takes less energy to run a harmonious system. Because people go, well, you know, it sounds like this is very utopian. Well, the thing is, let's not look at it as utopian. Let's look at it as harmonious. So I ask people, would you prefer to live in a harmonious household? Would you prefer to work in a harmonious workplace? Would you like to live in a harmonious community? And once you begin to realize that harmony is often a choice, then you begin to realize that there is this feeling of love that connects everything. And through that power of love, in the cases of most people, it enables us to transcend our differences and find emergent solutions. And the fourth factor is imagination, which allows us to magnify the food that comes from the earth and the energy that comes from the sun, and that is our technology and our inventiveness. And so the real challenge right now is not necessarily to develop more technology, but it's to learn to use our technology in the service of love, in the service of life, in the service of nourishment. And that's what has to lead right now. It's interesting that, if the human species is redeemable, that has to do with that quality that we have of love. That is the one thing that's redeemable about us. You know, maybe we're cute in other ways. But even our technology, there's nothing compares with love. There's nothing that compares with the harmony and beauty and that comes from music, from creating beautiful things, from caring for another being. Isn't it interesting, and I know that everybody's had this happen. Now that we have the internet, what kinds of photos circulate? They're the photos of the fawn and the tiger together, or the
together,
puppy.
Yeah.
So you see all of the, why are we so attracted to these interspecies photos? What is it about them?
That's really wonderful to point that out, actually. Right?
Because that's what we long for, because we know it's our destiny.
I notice when you're talking about harmony that many of us don't expect that. We don't expect to meet harmony in the workplace. We don't expect it a lot. So it's not like something we're geared for, is it?
Well, I'm not talking about false harmony. It's interesting. If you look at the, we've all seen the prism, and there is this, all the colors of the rainbow on one side and this pure white light coming out the other. What's significant is that if one minuscule, infinitesimal sliver of color is left out, there is no white light.
Oh, wow, isn't that amazing?
So that would indicate that every one of us and everything, whether we think it's good or not, is part of this white light. It's part of this whole experience that we have. And it means leaving nothing out. In our book, we talk about the work of Leonard Laskow, who wrote a book called Healing with Love. And he started out as a surgeon, MD, And at some point, he began to recognize that he had this healing power that seemed to come out of his hands. And after having success with patients, I guess, as the Swami would say, well, it works in practice, but does it work in theory? He went into the laboratory and actually began using this power of love to work with cancer cells in a petri dish. And what he found was that by loving the cancer cells, that is, by harmonizing with them, by acknowledging their right to exist, he was able to invite them to shrink. And he was able to diminish these cancer cells by a factor of 40% by loving them rather than resisting them, by including them, and after making friends with them, requesting that they return to a healthy state. That's the power of love.
And that's absolutely wonderful. And so was that taken on by different hospitals? I don't remember that part of the book because I haven't...
It's in the chapter called The One Suggestion. Well, you know, the thing is this, that we are living in a world where still the caterpillar dominates. We have this, this phenomenal ability to heal. And even, you know, it's called the placebo effect. And simply believing that you're going to get well, in one-third of the cases, people will get well if they believe they're being given something to make them well.
Mm-hmm.
But because we live in a materialistic culture where drug companies are having to make money off of their drugs that they've invested in, even if a drug is only 10% better than the placebo effect, the drug is put on the market, when perhaps what we really should be collectively learning is, how do we activate that placebo effect in ourselves? How do we use our minds to actually create healthier cells? Now, we have many people who are beginning to enter into those pursuits. We have a very robust, holistic and complementary medical system in this country and in the world. But the dominant culture, and that's the one where the money is running out, to do all these things, is still insisting on developing these drugs, these material things that can be sold that will make them great profit, rather than teaching people the spiritual, emotional, and mental techniques that will enable them to have mastery over.
I think it's really interesting that in all this healthcare debate, that one of the most fascinating things to me is that complementary care is actually cheaper in the long run. You know?
It is. And you'll notice that it's not in any of the conversations. There's a wonderful new book by Dr. Len Saputo, S-A-P-U-T-O, if you Google that. And he's an MD. However, he talks about how to integrate these natural, simple, non-invasive, preventive measures into the healthcare system, saving us billions and billions and billions of dollars. But if you look at the what we call the two-potty system that we have right now, both of these political parties are beholden to those who pay their bills. And if it costs, you know, if you have to be a multimillionaire to run for office these days, that tells you, that offers you the limitations. Limitations are...
Well, one of the things I want to say is, isn't it true that this kind of consciousness is rising even in some of those people?
Of course,
I mean,
it is.
This is my cultural creative dream for a more rapidly developing cultural creative.
Well, I did have a conversation with Paul Ray last year, who has developed this, and he wrote the book in 1999. And at that point, cultural creatives comprised 25% of the adult population. We're now up past 30%, and he said that 10% of everybody else is in transition. So that people
10% of everyone else
is in transition. So we are now between 30 and 40%. And as time goes on, I mean, consider 60 years ago, this demographic didn't exist. As
and
time goes
sort
on,
of like rising in people's consciousness in spite of them, right?
Yes, and the thing is, we can if we look at this as butterfly cells, the imaginal cells of this new organism beginning to connect with one another. So when people go, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? Well, number one, get out of the way of falling caterpillar pieces. And number two, cohere with your butterfly community and begin to build and weave this new economy that's based on real value, that's based on growing food, that's based on using the energy from the sun, that's based on promoting love and imagination and investing in our children and recognizing that we do indeed, like the indigenous people say, have to think back seven generations and forward seven generations.
Yeah, I like that. What about media? What do you have to say about media?
Well, you know, there's only one mainstream TV news media that's actually telling the truth about what they're doing. CBS.
CBS.
So if you want a CBS, go to mainstream media. They are only allowed to report inside certain lines, certain issues they can't deal with. And more, those are the very things that have to be dealt with. So can I say bullshit on the air?
Sure, I think
okay.
So. We'll find out
okay.
In a hurry, won't we?
Well, you know, this is the year that I think that word should now become totally, you know, it should be said everywhere because we're surrounded by it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a relentless 24/7 BS industry that's designed to keep us distracted. We call it weapons of mass distraction. That's designed to make sure that there is no fruitful discourse between the left and the right, so that we stay divided and conquered.
Stay divided. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, into these red tribe Republicans, blue tribe Democrats. So what's happening is every day, every month certainly, but every day, there's more distrust of the media. There's more understanding that the political forces in the Democratic Party at the top and at the Republican Party do not have our interests at heart. And
mm-hmm.
this interesting movement, this Tea Party movement happening over on the right wing, and I'm in touch with a number of people who are involved and organized in that movement. While the mainstream press tends to play those people as ignorant yahoos who are racist and backward, et cetera, as a matter of fact, it's much more accurate to say that these are disgruntled populace.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republican Party is having a harder and harder time controlling them. There was just an article that came from Newsmax, the conservative news service. There was recently the CPAC, I think it was last weekend, CPAC, Conservative Political Action Committee, met for their big conference. And they did a straw poll as to the most viable presidential candidate for 2012. And Ron Paul got 31% of the votes. Mike Huckabee, who would seem to be the most congruent front runner, got 4%.
Wow.
These people are much more interested in economic issues, that is to say, recognition that the current economic order does not have our best interests at heart, and that the corporate state is not our friend, number one. Number two, they are less interested in social conservative issues, less
right.
interested. They're more libertarian, and they are less likely to be part of the law and order military-industrial complex.
Mm.
Like Ron Paul, think of it, one-third of them were voting for Ron Paul. Like
wow.
Ron Paul, they recognized that the military needs to be in the service of the American people, not the American empire.
Well, listen, I hate to end this, but we only have like 2 minutes left. And
oh, my goodness.
I wonder if Swami's got anything to say.
Well, of course I do. I've been waiting patiently, and you know, when they gave out patience, I got tired of waiting. I didn't stand in line. I didn't get any. So that is always a challenge for me. So in these challenging times, when you read the newspapers, let's face it, you're going to gain weightiness. So the best weightiness loss program on the planet is to, if gravity is bringing you down, let levity bring you up. Okay, so the main thing is to wake up laughing.
Aww.
You know, you say, well, how could you laugh at the political situation? I'll tell you, because there's definitely something funny going on. And then another thing, very, very important, is to stay positive. I have a new program. It's called Just Say No to Negativity. So it's
good.
Yeah, stay positive. And, you know, it's difficult. You know, like, let's say you come downstairs, and there's your kid. He's splayed out on the couch. You want to yell, but you have to use only positive words of praise. You have to say, what's right with you, you useful good for something? And wipe that smile onto your face.
Good for you. So do you think we're all going to be saved? Are we going to make it through this spontaneous evolution?
Well, you know, I think I don't think we need to save the world. I think we just need to learn to spend it more wisely. And I believe that humans, people say, are you a creationist or an evolutionist? I believe we humans were created to evolve. Otherwise, Jesus would have said, now don't do a thing till I get back. So we have the key to evolution. We recognize that we are all in this together, that we are all one with the same one. The universal oneness, the universe has us surrounded, we might as well surrender. So if you want to laugh more, come to my website. It is called wakeuplaughing.com. And I promise I will help you restore regular hilarity and prevent humoroids.
Hey, Swami, were you aware that the astrologists are telling us that with the planetary lineups, there could be a big revolution by July?
Well, you know, I don't make predictions.
Oh, you don't?
No, okay. No. I don't want to jeopardize my nonprofit status. Yeah, because if I get paid for something and I make a prediction, that's profiteering. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but I will say this, that we are awakening. And, you know, something that is better than prediction, I call it television. I television to you, you television to me. And we have healing and functional visions to work, to live into. You see? And so that is it. We have to tell our vision to each other. Because life is like a good deli. Even if something isn't on the menu, if enough people order it, they have to make it.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Steve and Swami. We love and respect a lot of what you're saying. I'm very inspired. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much, Veronica, for having me. It was a wonderful hour. And as Swami would say, may the farce be with you.
Thank you for that, Swami, and we'll be in touch at wakeuplaughing.com. Is that .com or .org?
.com. Namaste.
Namaste.
And namaste. Go. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Well, that was fun. That was Steve Behrman and Swami Beyondananda with Spontaneous Evolution. And what's going on with the future of humanity? They didn't answer the whole thing, but I'll tell you what, the book has a tremendous amount of information that you'll gain from it. All right, this is Veronica Entwistle saying, call in some love from the universe and send it out through your chest and through your heart to one another. And thank you again for listening. Good night.